You're listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast. I'm Sarah Marshall, and this podcast is all about growing social media communities. We hear how Future builds social media communities before launching a product.
Starting really with Facebook, we launch a page and we start creating a community, quite a long way off from launch. So we post stories and we just develop a community of people who are interested in the subject matter.
How a wedding title from Immediate Media retains brides within their social media communities after their big day.
We do a great job both on our social media platforms and in our online forum community to actually continue to engage these women once they're married.
We hear tips on community building from The Guardian, which this week passed the 1 million followers milestone on its @Guardian account.
It's not a surprise for me that the Guardian accounts that are handpicked are successful, and that's not being big-headed, but it's because a lot of love and effort goes into them every single day.
Let's start by looking at building a community before launching a product, something Future Publishing has been doing for the past 2.5 years.
My name's Catherine Radrich. I'm a group publisher in the creative division, now newly named the Future Women. So it is craft and women's lifestyle portfolio. We launch social media and blogs, but starting really with Facebook, we launch a page and we start creating a community, quite a long way off from launch. So we post stories, we may do a little bit of Facebook advertising, but generally it's organic growth. And we just develop a community of people who are interested in the subject matter. So with Molly Makes, for instance, it was a craft lifestyle magazine. So we started from our existing craft portfolio and then started building on that, reaching out to bloggers and communities which had the sort of the look and feel of the project we were going to work on, and started building an audience. And the same with Simple Things. We started building an audience of people who are interested in growing their own vegetables, seasonal food, upcycling, recycling, by just posting interesting stories and establishing Twitter, Facebook, and then closer to launch, a blog, where we start putting content on the blog too. So we create a sort of brand before we really actually launch. So closer to the time that we might launch a magazine or a website or a digital product, a digital app, for instance, we would then announce that the community that we had built, that we had a product, rather than just social media.
One of the advantages is the feedback the people in the community provide.
In the craft portfolio, very, very, very quickly, you can find out the sort of level of ability people want projects to be, the sort of aesthetic. They'll give you feedback very quickly on the Simple Things. We changed our cover strategy recently. Massive amount of feedback on that. So it's very, very interesting, yes. And you can also see what are the posts that create the most interest and most feedback. And that obviously helps. Or we use it just to research stories, like anyone does, really. If we're thinking of featuring something, we will often ask people what they think.
And any other advantages?
I think it creates a buzz. There's a PR buzz. You also get people who want to contribute to your magazine. So you get, for instance, once they realise that you're creating, that it's a brand, interesting writers and photographers and bloggers will get in contact. So it's not only a consumer community, but it's also people who will contribute to the product, but also advertisers as well. Obviously, it's very useful for us to have contact with advertisers in that way as well. So we can follow brands, they can follow us back, we can see what they're doing, we can comment, we can create a dialogue with potential commercial partners as well.
And those early adopters who were there before the title even launched remain loyal.
Develops a real brand loyalty, I think, and people like to be associated with things early on because, they become our advocates and they tell their friends about it if they like it.
Now let's think about how you keep an audience or find new followers as people leave. This could be the case for a life stage title such as a weddings or pregnancy brand. What happens to the brides after they get married? Do they leave the community of wedding planners?
I am Victoria Joy, the online editor of youandyourwedding.co.uk. It's true that the majority of our users and certainly our top target audience are brides who are actively involved in the planning process of their wedding, and social media plays a massive part of this. But we do a great job both on our social media platforms and in our online forum community to actually continue to engage these women once they're married. I think the run-up to a wedding and all the planning that goes into it, it is a really stressful time, but it's also a really rewarding and exciting time for the bride. And I think a lot of the time it's a chance for women who aren't usually creative to, you know, let their imagination run wild. And we actually find that brides love to continue to be a part of this even after their own wedding. So whether that's to help their friends who are planning their weddings or even to start their own bridal businesses or blogs. There's almost an obsessive element to planning a wedding. I think brides love to create something so magical and unique from scratch. And I'm sure there's also a few who love being the centre of attention. So we actually often find that once the day itself is over and the couple comes back from honeymoon and back to reality, brides feel like there's something missing and they find new ways to be involved in the wedding community. So we have women in our social media communities who've built up great relationships with other brides throughout the planning process and joined together to help newly engaged followers or fans. We've got women who use their own wedding planning experience to help sisters, friends or colleagues to plan their special day through our social network. So they're bringing new people. And we also have a great relationship with suppliers in the wedding industry who will often point brides in the direction of our social media communities to get inspiration and ideas for their big day.
So what tips does Victoria Joy have for building social media communities?
But I think one of the things we do really well across social media is interact with brides. So we offer advice from industry experts and become a really friendly authority on fashion, travel, beauty and craft, so that actually even when they're finished planning their wedding, they're not so much brides-to-be anymore, but we're still offering engaging content and conversation around the aspects of women's lifestyle that they're still interested in day-to-day. I mean, everything we do is related to weddings, but that's not to say it isn't of interest to a newlywed.
And some of those newlyweds become ambassadors.
Key is also building relationships and giving users a chance to use their own voice, allowing past brides to use their own experiences to influence others. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who wasn't happy talking about themselves, even just for a few minutes, and we definitely find that. We find that when we've built a really good relationship with brides across social media, they, in a way, become our ambassadors. You know, the moment their colleague or friend becomes married, they're sending them to the You and Your Wedding Twitter or Facebook or Pinterest page to join up and begin their journey. So I think there's something really valuable in not completely disregarding people who aren't necessarily in your, say, target audience, but actually using them to draw in other users. And I think also just be really clear about who you are as a brand and what you're there for. So if social media users are certain about what they're going to get from you and they know it's relevant to them, even if you've got people leaving, you can be sure to find new users that are now in a position where you can become indispensable to them. Because I think that's really important in terms of growing communities, but also keeping them and engaging those users. You need to offer something that they're not going to get elsewhere.
And now to a news outlet that this week reached a big milestone.
I'm Laura Oliver. I'm community manager at The Guardian. So this week, one of our accounts at Guardian on Twitter has ticked past 1 million followers. It's not our first Guardian account to go past that mark. Guardian Tech has been past it for some time, but it is one of our first accounts that's really sort of very highly managed by our community team to get past that milestone.
So how did the community team build that following?
It has a very kind of distinct voice, I think, which is something that when we first sort of employed community coordinators and started taking over some of these accounts was something we sat down and talked about. You know, what is the kind of persona behind this account? What language would we use and wouldn't we use in what situations? What communities elsewhere on the web would we like it to reach and contact? So there was quite a plan from the beginning about kind of what we would do and some sort of planned experiments along the way. So, you know, we've done things like takeovers where journalists from within the building will take over for specific periods of time, or if there's a breaking news event, we will say, you know, we're going to allow this account to be taken over by reporters or by editors who are covering it. So some plans of experiments in terms of special events. We're quite consistent as well. You know, we do plan out kind of what the coverage is going to be like during the day and throughout the week to make sure that we are reaching different areas of the globe, different audiences. So there's quite a lot of thought goes into that, not just on a day-to-day basis, but across the week, and equally, particularly into the weekends where our content can have a lot of long-tail value as well. You know, there's a lot of long-form pieces and feature pieces of the weekend. So how can we use Twitter to promote those? Our team do spend a long time, you know, this isn't rocket science, but replying to our followers, asking them questions, seeding content with them, encouraging them to get involved.
The various sections of The Guardian have a large number of social media accounts between them, from Twitter to Facebook to Google+, to Tumblr to Instagram, Pinterest and Flickr.
Taking Google+ as an example, because our main page is sort of about 1.7 million followers, I think. So it's ticking along rather nicely. Again, that's followed very much the same model as our @Guardian Twitter to begin with, in that it's cherry-picking key pieces from across The Guardian site. But as we have, again, done these kind of controlled experiments, I guess, with different types of content, so what plays well, and we've definitely noticed that there's a lot of interest in the very visual. So a lot of our galleries perform very well. A lot of our eyewitness photography performs very well in terms of shares and engagement. And similarly, anything on sort of scientific news, technology, environment, seem to play very well too. And so as a knock-on effect of that, that's why you'll see that our environment team have their own Google+ page, because they just found that there is a real audience and appetite for it there, and that the level of response and conversation that they get around that page is very of a very good quality. Similarly, our team that run the main Guardian page have set up a kind of Google+ community for Guardian Science as a way to encourage some of the science bloggers who write for our site to kind of have a networking space as well, because those kind of stories just seem to really resonate with the audience on Google+. So we're very much about kind of what's appropriate, about identifying the sorts of users and audience that we'd like to reach. We'll try out new things. We might not always get them right, but if we identify an audience that is on a platform where we don't have a presence that we really want to connect with, that might be reason for us to set up there as well.
And finally, what tips does Laura Oliver have on community building?
I suppose any tips I have probably have been said hundreds of times over, but it's not a surprise for me that, you know, the Guardian accounts that are handpicked are successful, and that's not being big-headed, but it's because a lot of love and effort goes into them every single day, and it is incredibly labour-intensive at times, but it brings us a great deal of success in terms of the model of journalism that we're following, which is that we want people to be in conversation with us. We want there to be engagement. We want people to have their say and for us to be able to talk directly back to them. A lot of the most successful projects that we run involving these accounts, so, you know, call outs or crowdsourcing or promoting new features or series on the site, have been planned in advance. You know, we're very much of the school of thought that it's not a case of just if you build it, they will come. You know, a lot of thought goes into, okay, which account should we be using? Who have we got following us already? Who do we need to build up in advance who will be interested in this feature? How can we reach them? How can we keep them with us after this series is finished? You know, a lot of planning goes into that. I can't really sort of stress that enough. There's a lot of thought goes into it behind the scenes.
To read more on how @Guardian reached 1 million Twitter followers, go to journalism.co.uk. You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.